312-981-7200. It is 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman, and I'm on the air till 11 o'clock. Dave Plyer coming up after us tonight for his Friday night program. I'm sure he's always got great stuff. So Dave coming up at 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Sarah Friend's going to join us from Curb Chicago. Talk about the changing Chicago skyline at 9:30. Louisa Chu and Nick Kindlesberger will be here. Talk about munchies as legal weed takes over the state of Illinois. We got to come up with better options, I guess, when we're high to eat. I don't really know how to finish that sentence, but we'll have that conversation with those guys as well as other things. I really want to get into whether or not the restaurant community in Chicago is worried about the restaurant tax, because the restaurant tax on downtown restaurants went into effect at the beginning of the month. And this question, this is a high-end, award-winning Chicago restaurant scene, probably one of the best in the country. And will it stop people from coming down if you have to pay a little bit more money for your number one meal? So we'll talk about that with Louisa and Nick coming up a little bit later. But as promised, tonight, it's the 8 o'clock hour. We're going to talk a little bit about Springfield politics. Chicago politics really kind of dominated the last couple months, Lori Lightfoot and everything that's happening here. But in the last week, Springfield has come back in full force. And it's still a couple weeks before the actual spring, quote-unquote, spring session begins. So let's talk about what to expect from that session, what to expect from 2020, and sort of break down what happened this week, including an explosive email that really talked about a cover-up for rape and really for political gain. This story is kind of rocking Springfield and the state of Illinois. Amanda Vinicky is here. Amanda covers politics for Channel 11, WTTW. Great to see you.
Glad to see you too, Justin.
And Tina Spondelis covers politics, Springfield, for the Chicago Sun-Times. Tina, good to see you.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
So let's get in. Thank you for coming down and being a part of
this.
We can
also talk munchies, by the way.
You can.
I mean, I'm not talking pop, but just in general.
Just in general.
As a muncher, as a believer in food, in snacks,
so I'm gonna let her
in
handle that one.
Restaurants.
You're a muncher. It's good. That's good. Professional muncher. Yeah. Good to know. Good to know.
I don't know if I'd quite put that on my business card. That I'm not going to go with that as my title, but
I
get input.
It's good. All right. So first off, let's get into the story that Tony Arnold and Dave McKinney broke at WBEZ about this email. This is continuing. And I think a lot of people lose sight that this is a continuing story from when the FBI raided Mike McLean, who is a longtime lobbyist in Springfield, ComEd, and including other places, but powerful lobbyist. And a couple months ago, they raided his email.
I think it was in May.
They
raided his home.
And now here comes the trickle of all the things they're finding from that computer. But this is one that has really rocked Springfield, Tina.
It has. We just know that he is very close with the speaker, and so we've always kind of wanted to understand the relationship and the fact that we know that he's under federal investigation, and the speaker has not publicly talked about this relationship at all. Both of us were at a Governor Pritzker press conference this week, and we said, should the speaker disclose what his relationship is, which is what we want to know every single week, and we still don't know. It's almost like if he's not close to him, he should say, I haven't talked to him since whatever, or we're no longer friends, or he doesn't do these things, mm-hmm. but he's not doing that. So that we're very interested. And the story shows like the power of local journalism and figuring things out when we don't really know what's going on with this federal investigation yet. Like we don't want to see people get in trouble, but it looks like that's what's happening, and we want to know the information, and we're going down our own path. But WBEZ found this through a FOIA request.
And this was an email from 2012. And just if anyone doesn't know this story, they found an email. They published an email from 2012 where this lobbyist, McLean, is asking two Governor Quinn staffers to help out someone who might be facing disciplinary action, and says this guy helped or shut his mouth or kept his mouth shut about the rape and about ghost payrolling or something like that. But the idea that this is really just how politics is kind of done in the state of Illinois, but it's really people are still trying to figure out what they're talking about.
Okay, so a couple things. First, I have a copy of the email in front of me, and this is the part that's really resonating, and I think it's pretty obvious why. So I'll just read the passage that is relevant.
You didn't like my anecdotal?
It was wonderful, but I just think
I want to hear the official.
It encapsulated what we're talking about, but just hearing the own words, I think, really does hit home with people, and that is this is the email that. So, and also, real quick. Background on McLean, he had served in the Illinois House with Madigan. So back in the 70s, they served in the House together. And then McLean eventually lost his seat in the early 80s and became a lobbyist. He is now retired from that function, but still clearly the speaker doesn't have that many people that he truly trusts. When you're in a position of power, I think that's probably pretty common, actually, but it is well known that McLean is one of his true confidants, his allies, despite the fact that, as Tina said, we haven't really heard him explain that relationship. Right. And at every turn, when something comes out about McLean, Madigan says, well, I didn't know that that was going on. I didn't know. I didn't know. This particular email is, as you noted, from 2012, talking about a state employee who it appears McLean had kind of helped along the way keep a government job. And he writes, this man is a good compliance person, as I told you. The attorney general's office and the sheriffs love working with him. He has kept his mouth shut on Jones's ghost workers, the rape in Champagne, and other items. He is loyal to the administration. Hmm. Lo and behold, the Quinn administration did not go forward with a disciplinary hearing that was supposed to have taken place.
That's so, really at the core of this is whatever you think about the story, and people want to unpack this, mm-hmm. that there is a, you could see like step one to step two where there was supposed to be a disciplinary hearing. That hearing never happened. And you could see that there is some power from this lobbyist and that the staffers at Quinn didn't do what they were supposed to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head right there, Justin. So we don't know anything about this quote unquote rape in Champagne. Maybe it was prosecuted. We don't know if there's a victim out there, if this was, you know, a cover up for a high ranking official. We don't really know anything about this. And so taking a step back, trying not to make any assumptions there, it certainly, I think, looks bad. Same with ghost workers, ghost payrolling.
Which doesn't
Why
get as much
should taxpayers
play,
which is, be? Which right, isn't right, getting as much right, play because it's not a four right, letter, right. really striking, horrifying
criminal,
word.
Right.
But criminal, if that in fact was taking place. And so, but what you talked about though is that as we're trying to figure out what is behind this, maybe. Again, we don't know. It could be something major. It could be something minor. Not that rape is ever minor, but we just don't know
yeah,
how this was handled.
It's crazy.
What we do know is, like you said, the window that it shows into how Springfield works
yeah.
in seeing some of these emails and seeing that the A and the B, the ask and the response that was given, and that evidently there was no hearing, and just that somebody felt empowered to even make that sort of ask and request.
Let me do this. Let me take a break. Come back. I want to talk about how people are responding to this because Governor Pritzker has been on the record. Madigan put out a statement. Pat Quinn has talked to the press. Even McLean, the lobbyist himself, said something about it when coming out of a building the other day. Tina Svondelis, Amanda Vinicky are here with me tonight with Talkin' Springfield and, of course, all the news that happened this week and what we can expect from 2020. We'll get to that this hour. So 312-981-7200. Stay with us. 720 WGN, Justin Kaufman with you. Amanda Vinicky and Tina Svondelis are here with Talkin' Springfield talking about this email that was this bombshell email and just about how it's shaking up Springfield, the major players here. So let's do a rundown of what the major politicians in Springfield are saying. First off, Governor Pritzker, where are we at? What is his take on what came out in this email?
We got a statement from him, I believe, on Tuesday, or maybe the day after, the day of the WBEZ story. And it just said, it's appalling, and we will be referring it to an investigative authority. They did not really tell us who. Then the next day, we actually saw him, and we asked lots and lots of questions.
Lots.
It was very fun. And he basically said he did not have any sort of investigative authority to do anything himself, and made points like, we can't just go knocking on doors and getting subpoenas and questioning people. There's a process to it. So he said that the governor's office is working with the office of the executive
Which
inspector general.
Seemed a little bit inadequate in the way that a lot of the pundits and analysts have said, why didn't you ask? Why don't you just call Mike Madigan? Why don't you just call
exactly.
him up and say, hey, what is this? What am I supposed to know about this? Why am I blindsided by this?
We asked that. We said, why didn't you just ask the speaker, what is this? Should this go to a law enforcement entity? What is going on? And he said he did not call and that he was looking at the stories that we were all writing. But they did speak a little bit later. Apparently after our press conference, the speaker and Pritzker.
Get him on the phone.
Right. So
all right. So Madigan. So Speaker Madigan put a statement out, and that's all you're going to get from him. But it's a statement that says he's troubled by this.
Says that he's troubled by this and that he didn't know anything about it. So I think really, this is something where we've seen this. I've described it as a cascade of corruption scandals. We don't know where this is going to lead. Certainly, the FBI has been quite busy digging into corruption in government, a lot of it that is tied to what happens in Springfield under the Capitol Dome. And none of this has directly involved Madigan. In fact, the last time that Madigan did answer questions from reporters, albeit briefly, he said, "I'm not under investigation." That said, it's not like the FBI would send you a cute little letter and say, "Heads up, I'm on the way." That's not how they operate. Yeah.
Some 2020 investigations to pay attention to.
Right. Yeah, but, and so this is interesting to watch, though, in terms of just the fallout, because you have a lot of Democrats expressing outrage for the email and wanting to know what is going on. Some have said, and I think this is sort of the tone that Pritzker took, is that you need to be victim focused. If there is, in fact, a rape victim, be focused on that and less so on the politics of the matter. That said, I think there are just via my, you know, responses to my Twitter feed and such, people that are really upset. And they're like, "Hey, wait a second. It's not like this is the first scandal." And so where is your outrage when it comes to the fact that clearly there are ties to Speaker Madigan? And you've seen Pritzker really walk a tightrope there. He has not called out Madigan. He says that he has called out people that are directly under investigation who have been raided, but he's really careful when it comes to saying anything bad about Madigan. He's apparently not talking. That phone conversation that they had was, according to Pritzker's office, very limited, and all that it was, "Did you forward the this email matter to investigators?" Pritzker confirmed yes. Done.
Yeah.
And people are wanting more.
Okay, I'll play devil's advocate. I'll represent the speaker here. His name's not mentioned. He's not involved in this scandal. This is under Governor Quinn's administration. These are two Quinn's players or chief of staff or staff members. So why is the speaker caught up in this? Why are we asking the speaker to have some sort of information about this beyond what we know in this email?
Because so far what we've seen with the trickles of the federal investigation, it looks like they're circling him. And as we said, we don't have any sort of super clear indication of what it is they're looking at. When the feds are drawing a huge circle around someone, you're assuming that he's the target.
Yeah.
And so I guess it's there have been other stories as well, obviously, but the Sun-Times last year in February, we had the tape, the Solis tape, where the feds were taping a conversation the two had about private business. And so that kind of sparked a lot of things. And so there were questions of, are they trying to link whether he's using any sort of private business into the, you know, the legislative world? And that's where this all has stemmed. And then also we have a ComEd investigation and lobbyists and a lot of ties to Madigan and McLean, his best friend, literally, we say confidant and close friend, all that. It's one of his best friends. We have so many questions of what his role was this past year. Was he like a shadow chief of staff? There's so many rumors out there, and we never know because no one talks about it.
All right, let me be the person who speaks from who can speak from candor, I guess. But why is this in an email? That's the thing I don't understand. If you're the best friend, and these guys go to these restaurants, and they Madigan goes to full lengths to not be on tape and not do press conferences and not to, why is Mike McLean going, "Dear Pat Quinn's chief of staff, remember that rape? ... It seems like that's a Bush League 101 for politicians who are trying to cover stuff up.
You know, Justin, you are not the first person that I said that I've heard say that. It clearly, again, a rape is mentioned. There's a serious matter at hand. But anybody that is involved in Illinois politics, I mean, this was an email, from some time ago, from 2012. But it's not as if it was from 1998 when people were like, "Hey, what, email, huh?" I mean, you know that it is something that can be found via the Freedom of Information Act. So,
especially now that the feds have the emails. I mean,
so this is outside of the feds. This is WBEZ requesting information from now Governor Pritzker's administration. It's whoever the governor's office is. I believe, I mean, I did not make the request, but that it's just a FOIA of all communication from Mike McLean to the governor's office. So this has, maybe the feds have it. Maybe this led the feds to it. Who knows? Again, the feds aren't issuing a press release.
But the feds are interested in this guy too, McLean.
They're interested in this guy. They raided his home. But, I mean, to your point, this is pretty silly. You, in general, don't put anything in email that you wouldn't want your mother to read. Also, don't put anything in email, particularly if you are writing to a government employee.
Okay, so
did he want that, though, is the other thing. Did he want these people, not us to read it, but was he taunting the Quinn administration with maybe some information that he had?
Right.
As we see him as this power figure. He clearly is. And this is 2012, so he definitely had more power than he does now, or people are kind of hiding from him. So did he have information that he was taunting to the Quinn administration as in, hi, I want you to help this guy, and I know this.
And I know this.
And I know that you know this. Perhaps. We don't know.
We don't know.
And okay, it's just a power thing.
At the end of the day, you guys both cover Springfield. I mean, is everybody on edge that, you know, that these emails can be FOIA'd, that stuff has been talked about, that the lobbyists are getting raided? I mean, is this kind of an edgy time for Springfield politicians and lawmakers?
I think edgy time in terms of people you meet, phone calls and things, but I think politicians have been super careful with emails for so long. We know that Madigan doesn't have a cell phone and does not email. We know the former governor didn't really email very much. Whenever we got calls from him, it was no caller ID. Like, people are very careful. Right. I think Governor Pritzker is very careful. So this is like a whole different realm of exposure.
Which I think
is why
people
are very careful,
right?
Which will be harder to find. If people do wrong things in the future, we're going to have a hard time finding
it. Yeah, well, that's really the story, is that politicians have adjusted, not in a good way,
right,
to transparency to save themselves so they can continue to do this stuff.
Make a phone call. Right. Don't send it in an email. But again, that's pretty...
Yeah.
Or 101.
Just like don't Goodfellas. Do
that. Or don't do anything
don't
bad.
Do
I mean,
bad
really,
things.
There's a very easy...
We pay you as taxpayers. Don't do bad
there's
things.
There's a very...
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. All right. 312-981-7200. Amanda Vinicky and Tina Smondelis are here. We'll take a break. Come back. Let's talk about the state Senate president's race. Or I don't know if you call it a race, but election that'll be coming up here. This is interesting to me about who's going to be running the Senate or one of the most powerful politicians in Springfield. And it's up in the air right now. It seems like it. So we'll talk with two of the foremost experts or reporters on the issue. And we'll talk with these guys coming up, Amanda and Tina, here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. Texts are coming in. To heck with the politicians, including all of them in charge, Pritzker, Madigan, etc. A woman may be assaulted. That's the crime we should focus on. But to be honest, I've heard that from Pritzker. I mean, he's been front and center about saying that same thing. He's not necessarily making it about politics. That's what Tina and Amanda just said, that, you know, it's more about there might be a crime here, there may be a victim, we should pay attention to that. So continue with the conversation about Springfield. Let's move on from this story and talk about the state Senate president race. John Cullerton said he's not coming back. He's resigning. So now it's up in the air. The Democrats in the Senate are all jockeying for position. There are at least three people who may be interested in taking over that position. That's a very big position, Tina. I mean, we would think about the people in Springfield. It's usually Madigan, Cullerton, and the governor. Even when it doesn't even matter about political parties. They're one top three. So there's got to be a lot at stake when it comes to picking the next state Senate president.
There is, and no offense to the Illinois House, but, you know, people often view the Illinois Senate Democrats as kind of taking the lead in a lot of things. Say with the budget impasse and other things, they've kind of, whenever there's been squabbles in the Illinois House because there's so many members and different opinions, they kind of take the lead. So it's very important. They're both in a super majority, but they do, you know, they take the lead in things. This is very important, and it's unprecedented because... Not unprecedented, but Cullerton has been there since 2008 or 2009. So we haven't seen this play out in a while of what it's like to pick a new Senate president. So it's a cool new world in a really strange landscape right now.
Let's start, before we move on to who the players are who are jockeying for position, Cullerton had a good run for 10 years. And I saw a tweet about all the things that he had accomplished. You know, everything from, he was the Senate president for the Democrats when Bruce Rauner was governor and all the budget impasse, but he also, some big social agendas, gay marriage in the state of Illinois and other big ticket items that John Cullerton had sort of shepherded in Springfield.
I think he did seatbelts.
He is huge on seatbelts, also very vehemently anti-smoking, and so was key in a lot of the measures that led to, for example, smoke-free Illinois, which you can't smoke in bars, restaurants,
right,
anywhere. I have to say, I obviously am a reporter and try very hard to be objective, impartial, similar meanings sure. behind those things. But regardless, that is one of my personal favorite laws.
You don't have
so
to, you for know, that smell alone, like the,
it is wonderful.
Well, as
you
yeah,
thank you for cutting down my dry cleaning bill.
The worst. It's when the you worst. Went to sleep and you woke up the next morning with your pillow and your hair.
Remember when you'd walk into a bar and it'd be like, it'd take 2 seconds. You wouldn't even have to be in there for more than 10 minutes. Just 2 seconds. Oh, no. And then you like just yep. had to smell like it for the rest.
The yeah. worst.
But, so, but a lot of things
so
like
thanks
that.
To yeah. Senate President Cullerton for that.
Yeah, there you go. So he also was politically, he was a political power player. I mean, he was able to, when there was a standoff between the Republican governor and the Democratic House Speaker, it was John Cullerton who kind of came together and tried to make moves on various issues, budget impasse, pensions. Regardless.
He tried to come forward with this quote-unquote grand bargain. He definitely there was a change in tone from his predecessor and certainly from the way that things work in the House in terms of bipartisan cooperation. Cullerton and now retired Senate Minority Leader who was around at that time, Christine Rodonio, clearly have a close relationship and continue to do so. Cullerton's been sort of making the exit rounds. He will be actually on WTTW Chicago tonight. Airs at 7 p.m. Channel 11, everybody. Plug. he'll be on our program on Monday night. By the way, I had a sit down with Pritzker today that is embargoed until Tuesday, in which, of course, we talk and I ask about some of these Madigan issues. So both of those will be coming up there. But Cullerton tried to get the grand bargain through.
Yeah.
It did not, in fact, work. But I do think he sees part of that as his legacy. Before we get too far out in front in terms of, again, the subjectivity coming in, yeah. There are critics, of course, of Cullerton, who particularly at this point in time of corruption wonder what he's doing there and wonder if he did enough, particularly as there have been members of the Senate Democrats going back to then Senator Ira Silverstein, who had some sexual harassment issues, but Cullerton continued to contribute to his failed campaign, Silverstein's failed campaign for reelection. A distant cousin, also Senator Cullerton, but this guy is named Tom, who is fighting charges for embezzlement, but also Senator Sandoval, who now is no longer in, but he's one that we know his home and both of his offices were raided. Senate President Cullerton said, we've got to wait and see.
Right.
We've got to wait and see. Well, he would take umbrage with that, but there are those who said he has not done enough.
What kind of politician, where did he lean? I always think, because there were progressives in the Senate, and I think of, I guess, Dan Biss and others like that. But where was Cullerton when it came to his political leaning in the Democratic Party? Because he had to tightrope that, but it seemed like he always kind of was in the center.
I feel like the Illinois House had a little bit, like I said, it's the numbers game where they're definitely progressive or progressive figures in there that could kind of sway things. I mean, he was a little different in the House or in the Senate, rather. I think he was very in the middle, and he seemed like he was a good negotiator. He wanted peace, whether you agreed with him or not. And like as Amanda's talked about with Christine Rodonio, totally different beliefs, but they got along very well, and they always got things done. And so he kind of just showed that you can work with people that you don't agree with. It's so much less contentious when you go to the Illinois Senate versus the Illinois House.
What a concept.
Unless it's a totally, you know, very partisan issue like abortion or guns or that sort of thing. Then you see everything play out. But otherwise, it's pretty peaceful.
We're trying to get it done. All right. So who's going to replace Senator Cullerton? I mean, I know that Senator Lightford, Senator Harmon, is it Senator Sims? Is that
right?
Yeah. Those are the three.
You got it. Yeah.
Thank you. Hey, thank you.
Ace that pop quiz.
Are we done? Can I go? Head out into the fog? All right. So Lightford has been a big player in Senate Democrat politics for a while, and it seems like she'd be a front runner. But Senator Harmon from Oak Park is also a big player. Is there a division of who wants who, or is there? Are they kind of leaning towards one of these guys?
It seemed like it at the beginning, and there have been reports that there was this meeting this week at a Hillside Hotel. The Senate Democrats met to talk about kind of the rules of electing the next person, which is kind of funny. It's like a TV show. But they are going to appoint the person next Sunday at the 19th, which is kind of an unusual time as well, because no one will be there. Maybe that's why, because it'll
we'll be
a little...
We'll be there, though. Tina and I will
be there. Reporters will be
Don't
there,
worry.
But I mean, the rest of the General Assembly won't be, and it's a one-day thing, and that's when we'll know. But it is kind of a popularity contest, so at the beginning of this, we kind of assumed Senator Lightford from Maywood would have kind of the heads up on this, but Don Harmon has done a lot. He's a representative from Oak Park. LG Sims has done a lot. There's money figures in this, but it's such a weird thing because it's not like you're running for governor, you're going to run a TV ad or whatever. It's just kind of showing your power of raising money, and that was a huge power of Senate President John Cullerton.
So it's really like smoke-filled room type stuff. I mean, there is no...
There will be a public vote. There will be one, but first you're going to have the closed room votes. And they will... presumably, and anything could happen. They may not all, you know, reconcile and get behind one candidate, but presumably they will, and we will see a unified front from Democrats. They're not to say that people won't be internally disappointed, but they will, when they cast their votes on the Senate floor, that there will be a pick, and it will sort of be preordained after that. But in a sense, I mean, it is, as Tina noted, it's how much can they raise money? It's leadership style. It's popularity. It's past connections. It's have you burned me in the past? It's perception. There has been some consternation over whether, you know, Harmon's job is also an attorney. Is that a problem? As is Sims, who is a lobbyist. Is that a problem? Senator Lightfoot has
so
some
Sims
ethics.
Sims is a senator and a lobbyist?
Yes. He has some.
I don't know what's going on in your town.
And that said, Senator Lightford has had some ethical quandaries that have been reported in the media in terms of some of her relatives having state jobs. So, nobody is without a flaw, at least when it comes to how it is reported.
Yeah, because it can't really. I mean, right now is such an important time because if one of these candidates becomes a Senate president and then a week later they're like, oh, did you find out they did this, did that, did this, and it's attached to this scandal and that scandal. It just can't look good for the Democrats.
No.
They really have to make sure that that's not
we
on the slate.
We have to hope these three are like saints, basically.
Good
please be saints.
That's the hope, right? Oh, geez. And what does Mike Madigan say? They stay out of Senate politics? Is that the idea that the House just stays out or the governor in that kind of case?
Yeah, I mean, that would be... one would think that they have a favorite, but it is in their best interest to not get involved in that.
Or
that is an internal
discussion.
They might be doing things behind the scenes, but yes, they don't want to be too much in there because it's like anything else. If you get behind the losing horse, this has some more drastic consequences for both Madigan and particularly for the governor. So it's in sort of their best interest.
Yeah, that's
hard.
Obviously, and they're not going to make any public statement about it, but they would assume they have their favorites. There also has to be a little bit of autonomy, right? I mean, I know they all play on the same team and this idea that Democrats run Springfield, but there is this public notion or this public image issue where everyone thinks that everyone does whatever the speaker says. And Cullerton fell into that he almost felt like it was at times he was a crony of Madigan and the machine. So did they have to have a little bit of independence? Is there a need in Springfield to have somebody who might be autonomous from the Madigan empire?
Yeah, I think people are looking for that. I think that with Cullerton and Madigan, we see two Chicago lawyers who are very close, who talk to each other all the time, and people might be wanting a little bit more independence. And you can see that a little bit in each of these three in some capacity. Yeah, you would hope that they would do that immediately and just say, we're going to do things for the best interest of the state and not just Chicago. That's a huge issue for a lot of issues that we see. At the veto session, there were accusations of regionalism, which is every single session almost. So these people have to really show that they care about the entire state, not just Chicago, no matter where they come from.
Where is Senator Sims from?
They're all Chicago.
Chicago? I mean, Lightford is...
Chicago area.
Harmon's Oak Park, Chicago or suburbs.
And this would be, if I'm not mistaken, would it be the first Senate president woman if it's Lightford? Because
Black woman. The first, and so it would be a big deal. And I think that that is certainly something that people have acknowledged that they would love to make history in that regard.
Yeah, that would be pretty historic in Springfield and the Senate. 312-981-7200. All right, so let's do this. We'll take our last break. We'll come back. We'll have a chunk of time to talk about what to expect in 2020. I want both of your take on Chicago, and Mayor Lightfoot has to go down to Springfield and get some of these things done, because as we've talked about in this program, if you thought $800 million was a big deal for last year, it's going to be bigger next year when it comes to the budget deficit. She needs Chicago casinos redone. She needs whatever the real estate transfer tax. She failed miserably in the veto session to get that done. What makes us think that that's going to get done in the spring session? Tina Svondelis and Amanda Vinicky with me tonight here on 720 WGN, so stay with us. Justin Kaufman here. Amanda Vinicky is a political reporter at Channel 11 WTTW for the show Chicago Tonight. Tina Svondelis is a political reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. And we're talking about Springfield and what to expect in 2020. So right before the break, talked about Mayor Lightfoot came down to Springfield, which was very, I was surprised there wasn't more, fanfare, hit piece, whatever you want to call it, on how much of a failure it was. I've never in my lifetime seen a Chicago mayor not get what they want out of Springfield in such a disastrous way. And I'm not trying to get on Mayor Lightfoot for any other reason, and she still has time in the spring session. But boy, oh boy, the thought was they're all Democrats. I thought she was going to get everything she needed for the city of Chicago. She got nothing.
You know, you have to wheel and deal. And while voters love and embrace, I think that and part of why she won in that landslide election was because she's an outsider. She'd had roles in government, but really hadn't worked and been part of the system. You got to know how to do that. And I think there were some failures in that regard, just knowing how to make the exchanges. It's not a demand. It's not just, I want this, and so therefore it shall occur. That's part of it. She just didn't have that sort of cachet. Also, legislators had taken a bunch of very difficult votes. And what can't be forgotten is that particularly, as Tina noted, I mean, it's not just a legislature made of people from the city of Chicago. So there are a whole lot of people in that General Assembly that don't particularly give a hoot. And in fact, anything that they did to help the city or that would be perceived as helping Chicago to the detriment of their own areas would, of course, be harsh for their own political futures.
Never stopped a mayor named Daley. But.
Well, I also think that this was Governor Pritzker's first year. He wanted it. He wanted all the things that he wanted. He did not care about the rest, honestly. And he got them. And so I think we may see more movement in the second year. I also think that she should get some credit for going to talk to the Democrats. Mm-hmm. She went inside the House Democratic Caucus, and those people came out of there and they were amazed. People like meeting with her. She listened to them. They listened to her. They said, we've never seen a mayor in this room.
Okay.
To truly engage.
And get the job. So, well, why didn't they
vote? It's not just about having a presentation and singing a song. It's about other people and their priorities.
And I think Tina's right. And clearly, the governor nor the legislative leaders put a ton, I think Cullerton more so than Madigan, and Cullerton had been very much trying to get it over the finish line. Madigan had stepped away from a lot of those negotiations, and so that makes it difficult to coalesce House members. And as Tina noted, Pritzker clearly had other priorities. Despite a Chicago casino being fundamental to his infrastructure plan, he needs that money from the Chicago casino too. So it will become a priority for him. It wasn't enough, or then it likely would have happened.
Yeah. I'm just, as a political observer, you've got a governor from Chicago, you got a speaker from Chicago, you got a Senate president from Chicago, and you got a mayor coming down there needing something from Chicago and she can't get it done. Will she get it done in the spring? Because she needs to, they need to redo the Chicago casino bill.
The tax structure, so they get more out of it.
And they need to get a real estate transfer tax that would, if you buy a house for more than $1 million, you pay more tax or something like that. It seems like they love that stuff in Springfield. Feels like
they
love taxes. So why is it can she rebound, learn from the mistakes, and get this done for Chicago?
Yeah, I think maybe, as you said, her going down there, nothing happening, was probably a humbling experience for her. And, you know, she had a lot of conversations with people about what to do differently. And Pritzker has different priorities now. And the speaker has different priorities now. And there's a vested interest in helping the Chicago. And they need the money now. As Amanda said, it wasn't totally an immediate need to get this money. It wasn't. They weren't going to get it immediately. Even at veto session, they said, oh, well, we can pass this in January and it'll be the same effect.
Right.
So now there's a little bit more of a crunch time as opposed to last year.
And dynamics change after the primary.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so let's get into I want to get to elections too, but let's get into what are the big priorities for year two for Governor Pritzker. There's this graduated income tax and cracking open the state constitution. That's going to be on the ballot. That's the idea. That's what 2020 is all about. That's why you see commercials on your TV. You're like, I didn't know it was election year. Who am I voting for? Tax? So you're Republican or Democrat? Okay, great. But that's why you're seeing this stuff, because it's going to be on the ballot and it has to be in front of the Illinois voters.
Yeah, this is, as you noted, this is a changing the state constitution to allow for your income to be taxed at a graduated rate, in the sense that if you make more money, you'll pay more in taxes. And that's just sort of a blanket question that'll be on the constitutional amendment. The legislature has actually passed a bill that puts those rates in place, but that itself is not what is on the ballot. And this is going to be huge, I think, because there were a chunk of tax increases in Chicago, of course, the population center and a major voting center already, and in the state legislature as well. And so mm-hmm. there's a degree of tax fatigue. But some people may feel, and particularly this is the challenge, what Pritzker needs to do is make the argument that this is going to help you,
right,
middle class. He's going to butt up against a bunch of business organizations that are funded, particularly, again, by businesses and by many people that, like Pritzker, are quite wealthy, that don't want to pay that, that are going to say, this is giving the legislature an opportunity to reach deeper into your pockets.
Right.
It may protect the middle class now, but not going into the future.
They're going to have to define how rich is rich. That's going to be the big thing.
Yeah.
Because if people are like, oh, it's for households of 150,000 are going to see more tax, people are going to be like, what? That's because that's a lot of the people that are in the middle class in Chicago.
For now, it's about $250,000 in their structure that they have right now, or the people that are going to be hit the most. And so this 97% of taxpayers saving money are people that are making normal mm-hmm. human money. And
normal
it's not a lot that you'll see off of your tax refund, but it's a fair assessment to say you'll see a little bit, like $20. Here you go.
They need to structure their whole ad campaign over the idea of that.
Normal
that just
normal
human
dollars.
Dollars.
There are some other priorities.
Yeah, what are the other priorities?
This? So that is more of a political issue, since it's already on the ballot. It's out of the legislature. Pritzker has talked about kind of getting more money for education, early education, which every governor has ever said, because it's very important. We talked about some criminal justice reforms
mm-hmm.
this week, ending cash bail reform, other ways to try to get people out of prison, which has been done also with other governors, but it's a high priority for him as well. So we'll see some of that. There will also be some more ethical things going on in light of the federal investigations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not a lot went on during the veto session. And the push for the red light cameras, that is not necessarily, we don't know what he's going to do with that, but we know there are a lot of legislators who might want to ban it, to pull it back, to have more restrictions and things like that.
I just shaking my head here, because Tina, you're reporting on the red light cameras and what's happening in the connection between the two mayors is great. I was talking about it earlier in the week, where we were just we did a whole segment on the show last Friday night about who's got $60,000 cash in their house. And if I'm just the idiot who doesn't think that's normal, and
you
most of my listeners
own?
Said they don't
Jeez,
have $60,000.
Justin, yeah, what's right. wrong with you?
But it's
Man.
Fantastic. I'd love to have you back to talk
more
about
$60
that.
Bucks at home?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I don't have
we're
any
talking
cash
about putting
at home.
Putting cash in the pocket of your shirt.
Six, maybe.
Okay, so back to just when we put all this stuff together, it is all in light of an election year. Now, it doesn't necessarily affect Springfield as much, because this is going to be the state's attorney's race. This is going to be obviously the presidential race, but there's going to be elections on the mind of everybody in this state.
Definitely. And like, especially with the taxes, as you talked about taxes in Illinois, that'll be a big issue. And the state's attorney's race as well. I think the criminal investigations or any federal
County
investigations
clerk.
Will affect everything. And we saw mm-hmm. that during the mayoral primary, that Lori did very well because she had nothing to do with any of this stuff, and she had a capacity of understanding federal investigations. So I think that we will see unexpected shifts that you won't be able to predict which candidate should be ready for it.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, here we go. I mean, this is the 2020 year that a lot of people are talking about. I mean, but do people get so jacked up for the Illinois elections in 2020, even though this is a national year?
If a presidential race brings people out to vote, that will certainly affect the dynamic. Whether they're pumped about the candidates who are on the ballot or not, more than likely they'll cast a ballot. They're going to choose somebody.
Yeah.
And so even if that isn't what drives them to the polls, it most certainly is going to have an impact on all of those races.
Can I ask about one thing? I've been seeing a lot of rumblings about this. I don't know if you know about it, but in June, they passed sports betting. And they said, okay, it's in. It's going to do the whole thing. And this is the deal.
Where is it?
And it's January 10th. It's not available. I know Ryan was talking. One of the guys who works here was talking about the idea that he was at Rivers Casino, and it's there. They're like,
they're ready to go.
They're ready to go. Everyone's ready to go on it. It should be it's legal, but they have yet to figure out all the.
There's a timeout. What's happening? I'm sorry, here? I don't have any good sports metaphors.
We're really bad at this. I tried to write double downed yesterday, and my coworker would be like, "That's not a thing."
No, that doesn't work.
Double down. What's the hold up here?
The hold up here is in part that this isn't the only gaming expansion. You have the gambling board that is tasked with a whole lot. There's also major casino expansion, and while Chicago's may be stalled, they're quite busy with other efforts. There are big changes in terms of, again, that this brings in part of the corruption scandal in terms of some of these video gaming operators. There is an expansion of those video games. They're part of the money to fund all of the sports betting vetting is going to come from all of this expansion of gambling. So it certainly is going to, however, be to the detriment of money that the governor's counting on for his much-shouted infrastructure.
I'm assuming there's a license, of course, and then I'm sure there's a tax on all the there's tax on everything, and you're missing some pretty golden opportunities. The Super Bowl, of course, is the number one people
well,
bet
Indiana's
on March
got
Madness.
Going. Yeah, Indiana's got it going already.
Indiana so snap their fingers and they're ready to go. That's the only thing I'm thinking about. Is I'm like, you're missing golden opportunities of highly betted sporting events, which are going to go by the wayside. The Super Bowl and probably college basketball.
Illinois is behind. You are not wrong.
That's how we end the segment. Illinois is behind. And the fact that you guys have been staring at my mustard stain on my sweater every break.
It's on the other part of the sweater. It's on your main part.
He's got mustard everywhere, which, it's not a bad thing because mustard is the best condiment ever.
It's the first thing you said to me when we came in the studio. You got mustard all over you. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Thanks.
That's what friends are for.
Thank
you. That's what reporters are for.
Tina Spondelis covers politics for the Chicago Sun-Times. Amanda Vinicky covers politics for Chicago Tonight, Channel 11 WTTW. We talk Springfield. It's awesome to have you guys here. We got to do it again. And congrats. Continue the great work, and we'll continue to read. And
you
see.
Too. happy munching later.
For munching. That's right. Speaking of munching, the munchies, Louisa Chu and Nick Kindlesberger will be here to talk about. Now legal weed is upon us. What about the best places for munchies or the best options for munchies on Chicago menus? Both of them will be in studio in just about a half hour, right after we talk to Sarah Friend from Curb Chicago about what we can expect changes to Chicago's skyline. Have those conversations all coming up here on 720 WGN right after Vic's News. So stay with us.